Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. In this episode, I talk about the moment. And what I mean by that is the moment in life that a lot of people have, a lot of times when it's completely unexpected, in which things just click. They start hitting their nutrition. They start going to the gym consistently, where all the things that they really struggled with for so long, they just start happening. And I'm excited because I got to speak with Inner Circle member Sean, who is also a personal trainer and a coach, a really incredibly nice, smart, genuine, hardworking guy. But we spoke about his moment and how that came about, and maybe how you might be able to cultivate your own moment as well. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you do, please leave a review. They really do help a lot. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Sean.
Jordan.
What's up, man? How are you?
Not bad, man. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you for getting on the phone. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no problem.
Rico's right here. I know you want to say hello to Rico as well.
Hey, Rico.
What's up, man?
Not much.
How's your day, man? Everything good so far?
Yeah, everything's really good.
Good. And you said you have an event later today, right?
What was that?
You have an event later today?
Oh yeah, I got so I do improv on the weekends, so I've got rehearsal a little bit later.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Well, yeah. Cool. So thank you for hopping on. I know you're super busy and I appreciate it. And I know we scheduled this far in advance. So, I mean, talk to me, what do you want to jam on?
Like I said, I was pretty much open to anything. But you know, the thing that really kind of stuck with me was like, what helped me, like when it finally clicked for me to get serious about, you know, fitness and all that.
Yeah. I mean, and listen, I know we spoke about that earlier and I know like, you've come a long way. So I would love to just hear what your perspective, what's happened, what worked for you, what hasn't worked for you. Like, I would love to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So just basically just talk to me, like what have you noticed that was like a big turning point for you, a big moment that things just started clicking, that like you were more consistent? Just talk about it.
Yeah. So basically I started with personal trainers when I was like, I don't know. I was just turning 30, I think, and I had my first personal trainer, and you know, I think I used it as like a, you know, like a status of like, hey, I've got a personal trainer and I have somebody who counts for me and like plans exercises and stuff. And so,
got it. Okay.
You know, and so over the years, like when I sat down and thought about it, like I had hired about 9 different trainers over the years. And
wow.
Yeah, you know, because you move and there's somebody else and it's like, this is going to be the year that I get skinny. Every year was the year that I was going to get skinny. And so the very last guy that I hired, this awesome guy named Ray, he and I were training together for less than a year. But I was always just kind of dicking around and I was not really, you know, like, you know.
Did you think you were dicking around at the time or did you think you were being serious about it?
Part of me was like, you know, so I'm a comedian. I hang out with comedians, you know, like we're always just, you know, just joking around and stuff like that. So I was always like, hey, you know, like trying to make the session, like making jokes and like trying to be, you know, whatever. And he was not having it. you know, cause I was like, oh, right. Normal people don't always want to joke around. All right. So,
well, that's ridiculous in my opinion.
yeah okay. But I was being a brat sometimes and stuff like that, and so, you know, but in my head at the time I had decided he was the 9th guy that I'd hired long term, and I was like, in my head I'm like, you're it. If you can't help me figure out what's going on and what the fuck I'm doing wrong, I just give up, because I don't have it within me yet. And so we were together a little bit less than a year. I had again like a thing where I was just kind of joking around, and he's like, all right, you and I need to sit down and talk, and kind of scared me a little bit. And we actually had this huge fight, like real shouting argument about different stuff. And you know, and he just finally was like, what do you want? Like, what do you want? Cause he's like, this isn't fun for me. You're not making progress. So I don't really see my work being valued. And he was the first trainer to really say anything like that. Like,
was interesting. Was he
what was the shouting match about? Like the effort you were putting in?
A little bit, you know, and it was just sort of about our relationship as trainer and client, you know, and just like interactions and stuff like that. And like side comments and, you know, things that I thought were funny, but were not, you know, when I really sat and listened from his perspective, like realized like I was interacting with him in a way that he didn't want to be interacted with, but I wasn't reading it that way. I was like, but this is me. I'm a funny guy. So I'm just going to, I'm just going to double down on this instead of backing off.
Right? Yep.
Cause as soon as I bust your chops, just hard enough and you laugh, I'll be happy. And that's what, and you know, and your laughter is my approval. So like feed into this beast. And, but part of it was also like progress, you know, like he's just like, what do you want? And I just remember I just turned 40 and I remember I said to him, cause it, like I said, I made that decision in my mind, like you're it, but I didn't tell him that. But I said, I don't want to have this conversation at 45. I don't want to be saying this same thing at 45 that I said at 35 that I had at 30. Like, I just don't want to do this anymore. Fight this battle that just never seems to end. And he was like, well, you know, the answers, you just don't want to hear them. And, I was like, I know. And, but he really sat down. Cause he told me, he said, you got to choose. It's either like, get your shit together and really work with me, or this is over. Cause he's like, I just don't want to do this anymore. And so then I was scared. I was like, oh no. The last guy in my head is about to fire me. So I'm going to be fucked. And so I just finally shut up and like kind of listened to him a little bit better, started doing a lot more research on my own, stopped looking for the quick fixes. So, you know, at one point I had gotten onto Nutrisystem and I lost probably like 60 pounds, the lightest I've ever been. Yeah, I was like, It was, and it felt good, but at the same time, like I didn't know anything about food, you know, and this was years and years ago. So the food was that prepackaged mush, you know, and it was like salty and all that kind of stuff. And, but I lost like 60 pounds. I had gotten down to about 255. And, but when I was working with my trainers, my body fat number really never changed. My circumference measurements obviously changed because I was losing inches, but like they never really grew. Like my chest didn't really grow. My legs didn't really grow. Like, you know, so I was losing probably lean mass because I wasn't eating enough protein for sure. And, but I didn't care because the scale number was 255 and I've never been like, you know, I was like, I weighed 255 when I was a freshman in high school, you know, like, that's all that mattered. And then, but it didn't teach me how to eat, didn't teach me how to have a relationship with food. And, not that Ray taught me that, but Ray just kind of kicked me in the ass to start really analyzing, like, why am I eating? What am I eating? Do I really need to eat this much? And that really was what clicked it in there. It was this moment of like, we're very good friends to this day. And I still kind of tell him every once in a while, I was like that day in the little conference room in my apartment fitness center, where you basically told me you were going to fire me. I was like, I was like so scared. And I said, I didn't want to lose that. And that's pretty much what clicked, you know? And then shortly after that, I had started getting my diet more in check. In that conversation, I was like, I am doing the things. It's like, but it's taking me a while to adjust to them. And it's, you know, but at the same time, like a few weeks went by and a friend like kind of snapped a picture of me. And so I have my husband and I, Dave, went to New Zealand right prior to this conversation. We had spent 2 weeks in New Zealand. And so we have these pictures of me in New Zealand. And I hadn't really gotten serious. Like it was when I get back from New Zealand, we're going to get on track. And, we ended up, you know, so I have these pictures and a friend of mine around Thanksgiving, a little bit afterwards, has this picture that he took of me. And I just looked and I had lost weight, you know, between September and November, you know, and all of a sudden I was like, oh shit, like this is possible. And
interesting. And it was that picture that really hit it home.
Yeah, the picture, like seeing the visual, right? Because like with Ray, and you know, and we worked out 3 to 4 times a week together. I was really committed to him, and he was committed to me once I kind of got through this. And you know, but I see myself every day, and I wasn't taking progress pictures yet because I was in the like, oh, that's, you know, that's douchey. You shouldn't take a picture of yourself. Like, who cares? And then I doubled down and went whole hog into that a few months later. And that was, I tend to run the extremes of like, no, and then all the time. And then now I'm happily in the comfort zone of like when it's appropriate. And, but I hadn't taken a progress picture, so I hadn't seen anything. And then all of a sudden I was like wearing a similar shirt and I went, hey, wait a second, that doesn't hang the same way it used to. And
that's super interesting. You know? That's really cool. Cause I think a lot of people are scared to take progress pictures too.
Yeah.
Because like that first one they feel embarrassed. They feel nervous. They feel like ashamed a lot of times. So it's interesting. I'd probably say like 85 to 90% of the time that I ask people to take their first like starting picture, they usually have some resistance to it, some upset, but literally 0% of the time have I ever had somebody say they were upset that they actually did it.
Right.
Because when they could then look back at it and say, oh my God, like just like that moment that you had, they're so happy they did.
Yeah. And for me, the thing that finally, the last thing that really kind of made it all click into place was like, so like, I'm a people pleaser. I'm a gold star kid. I was the child of teachers. I was a teacher. Like I, like from authority figures, receiving approval is very important to me. And I always told Ray, I said, you know, I perceive you as an authority figure in my life. So when you're not approving of me, I'm like, I really worked. The two of us have grown immensely as human beings together. I'm not, I always joke with him about like how, when we first met, like, I don't think I would have predicted the path our friendship took at all, based on it, but it's been very positive. But he's like, he helped me a lot to understand, like, I don't need his approval. And so, I don't need to do it for my husband. And so that was the last kind of piece that clicked it into place, was who am I doing this for? And every single time when I thought about it prior, when I, you know, it was always for the approval of somebody else. It was, you know, as a young gay man in San Francisco, I wasn't always, as attractive as I wanted to be because I was overweight. And so it was like, I want, even though I'm in a committed relationship, I want other men to look at me and feel like, oh, they're missed out on something. And it was always seeking this outer approval. The last piece that clicked it for me was, if I'm not doing this for me first, then it's never going to work. It's never going to be good enough. And that's what happened, was I finally looked in the mirror and I said, I have to do this for me, because relationships can end. I can get divorced. Not that I want to, but I could get divorced. Yep. Ray and I could have another fight and we end our friendship. You know, like you and I, you know, connect a little bit and then, you know, you move on because you get busy, and it's like relationships end or, you know, go on back burners. And it's like, so if that's where my approval is coming from, then I'm going to lose that. So I need to approve of myself first, and then everybody else gets the benefit of that.
That's a really interesting point. And I think it's something that's, it's much easier said than done, right?
For sure.
It's one of those things that it's almost like super ambiguous. And I know a lot of people, it's one of those things that I struggle with a lot in terms of, a lot of people on Instagram, for example, say, well, you need to love yourself. You just need to love yourself.
Right.
And it's one thing that I get really upset about, because I'm like, well, yeah, of course we all want to love ourselves, but how about you? Like, how the fuck do we do that? Right.
It's, yeah.
It's one thing to say you have to do it for you, but can you articulate how that happened? Like, and if you can't, that's totally fine, because, you know, it's one of those things I think is probably really hard. But can you explain like that process of not only realizing that you have to do it for yourself, but what actually happened once you did realize that and how you started to do it for yourself?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think one of the things that I always did too, again, kind of like the comedy that I like to do is, so I would always make self-deprecating jokes about how fat I was, you know, and it's like, and again, you know, my husband always would kind of laugh it off, you know, and be like, you don't have to be so mean to yourself, you know, but it would always just, and he never joined in, he never piled on or anything like that, my husband. And then I remember one day just kind of making a joke with during a training session, and Ray was like, don't do that to yourself. You know, he's like, just don't. He's like, it's not funny. He's like, I'm not going to join you. You're better than that. And,
I like that.
And I went, okay, like nobody's ever done that before. And so what I decided to do was, like, I had self-deprecated so much that I probably did really hate my body. And so what I decided to do, and it's kind of, it took me a while to get comfortable with, but like basically I stood in the mirror every day naked, and I just looked at my body naked for all the stretch marks and the, you know, the tummy that hangs over my waist a little bit more than I want, and, you know, the extra skin here and there. And I just kind of started looking at it, and I started to focus on the one thing about my body that I really loved. For me, it was my arms. I felt like they were really, you know, something that I wanted to keep working on, but they were pretty good size. And so, like, every day for about a month, I would stand and look in the mirror, and I would tell myself, I am beautiful, I am loved, and I am worthy of love and happiness. As I looked at various other parts of my body, just to kind of get comfortable with that. And after about a month, it's like, this has got to be all about me. Because
did you struggle to believe that when you first started saying it?
Oh, for sure. I would say it and I'd laugh. I'd be like, what the fuck am I doing? Nobody told me to do this. Like, nobody, I didn't read it in a book. And I'm sure there's probably a dozen books out there that tell you to do something similar. But it was just sort of like a thing of like, I need to stare at myself and become comfortable with the skin that I'm in. Because if I'm not in love with myself, if I don't, then it doesn't matter what the exterior looks like, you know. And that was something I didn't appreciate when I was younger. Like, I always thought, like, well, if I was just skinnier, the dudes would be into me, and then I'd be getting laid more, and then I wouldn't hate myself as much. When I realized, like, none of that would have been true. None of that would have been true. Like, sure, I probably would have gotten laid more often, but, like, I probably would have still hated myself because I wasn't seeking, I didn't love myself. And so just kind of, yeah, but I did. I stood in the mirror. I laughed the first week. Like, what the fuck am I doing? You know? But then, like, the more I did it, the more comfortable I became with it. And the more comfortable I became with it, the more it kind of became my mantra of, like, this is me. This is where I am. And every point of improvement from here on in is icing on the cake, because in this moment, I genuinely am happy with my body. I'm genuinely happy with my fitness, and I'm genuinely happy in my relationship. So everything else here is just icing.
I love that. I really love that. And I think that's, you know, it's a really insightful point. And I love that it's practical. It's not just, hey, you have to love yourself. It's also like, hey, here's what I did.
Right.
And here's how one way I worked on it. And do you still have times where you struggle with it?
I do. You know, there are still moments where, you know, I I'm a trainer. I work in a gym, and I do have, you know, I have a spare tire, and, you know, I can let that get into my head. You know, I can see the guys that are here just as frequently as I am, who are making bigger gains and bigger progress. And, you know, you know, it's that compare and contrast of like, well, what are they doing? And it's like, well, that guy's 28. And, you know, so he's already, he's 15 years younger than you are. So, you know, there's that, you know, and he, you know, or this guy over here. And it's like, well, you know, I got dealt the genes that I got dealt, and that's what I'm working with. And, you know, in terms of like physique and shape and stuff like that, you know, not everybody's the same, and everybody's on this journey differently. And so when I do that, I try to check in with myself again, of just sort of like, you know, Let me turn that like judgment of myself into a positive statement for him. I work at a gym. I've been here for about a year and a half. So there's people I know very well, you know, it's like, let me be happy for his progress, or let me be happy for her transformation. It's not a statement on mine. And so let me like really send the positivity back out as opposed to consuming it as negative energy. And I really do try to live by that now, is like, stop judging everybody, stop comparing myself to them, and just really like, wow, that guy came in when I saw him a year ago, he was only squatting a plate and a quarter. Now he's up to almost three plates. Like, that's amazing progress. And I'm really happy for him. You know, I shouldn't be like, why am I not at three plates yet? You know,
that's the point that people really need to understand. And I think, and everybody struggles with the comparison trap, right? Like, everyone compares their progress to other people. It's one of the things I get all the time. People are like, well, I'm not making progress. I literally just had a call the other day about this, where this woman was like, you know, my progress isn't fast enough. And I was like, why not? And she was like, well, because it's not going as quickly as it should. And I was like, well, how do you know that? Like, based on what? And she's like, well, what other people are doing. I was like, you can't say whether your progress is fast enough or not simply based on what other people are doing. That's not a valid metric to go by.
Right.
Like, not to mention, who's to say that their progress isn't too fast, for example.
Right.
Or who's to say that their progress is going to be sustainable. I think it really, one of the best things I think about what you've done is that you've brought it all back to you. It's all back to what you can control and what you say and how you think. And when you allow so much of your actions and emotions to be dictated by, like, for example, like one of the first things you said, you're like, I have to do this for myself because the relationships in my life can change. The people in my life can change. Like, if I don't do this for me, then it won't last, because I'll be doing it for other people's approval. And if, in terms of looking at other people's progress, if you're comparing yourself to other people, then it won't last because it will never be good enough. But if you compare yourself to yourself, then that's the best gauge of progress, because it's the only way you could do it. I think this is one of the most this is one of the most unique and clear ways of describing the importance of doing everything for yourself and not for other people, and not comparing yourself to other people, because I've actually never heard anyone describe it this way. What you've done is a really amazing job of bringing it all back to you, and it's your responsibility, and it's how you choose to look at things. It's super important to discuss this, because as often as it's said, I think it's very rarely people discuss it so practically and clearly like this.
Yeah, thank you.
And do you still find yourself ever making self-deprecating jokes?
Not as often anymore. You know, it happens every once in a while, but it's not. It used to be the goal of like, I'm going to get everybody to like me because I'm going to pick on myself, and then they can't pick on me because I was bullied a lot as a kid. You know, I grew up. You know, I've told you that I grew up in Lowell, Massachusetts. I was a overweight gay kid in the early 80s in Lowell, Massachusetts. And let me tell you, that was not the time to be there. And
nor the place either.
Right. So, I mean, it's like I'm in a blue collar suburb and I'm like this like kind of outcasty, you know, nerd. I would like sci-fi was my thing, you know, and you know, I just didn't have a lot of friends. And so it was like, even today, this is one of my insecurities that I struggle with, is this idea of like, even the people I know who love me, and I have some amazing, incredibly deep friendships with people across the country through the improv that I do. Every once in a while, I always wait for the other shoe to drop. Like, this person doesn't really like me. They're just being nice. And if I can pick on myself, then they won't pick on me because I own it and it's my joke and they can't have it. You know, and then, but to be honest with you, the day that I made that decision, the day that, like, it really clicked for me was this person who I really did care about, you know, and I still do, Ray. He just was like, that's not funny. He's like, I'm just not going to do, you're better than that. And nobody had ever actually said that. And I'm sure people thought of it, but, you know, nobody ever said that. And so from that point forward, it really did kind of, you know, go off to the wayside, and it rears its ugly head as all of our insecurities do. But it's never with the same viciousness that I would do it or frequency. It's always just sort of like, you know, I embrace calling myself a fat kid, 'cause that's what I was. And, you know, it's that idea of like, I love food and, it's okay. You know? Whereas before it would be more of like, I'm a fat kid, so beat up on me. Let's pile on. Let's, you know, now it's more of like, no, I just fucking love food, you know? And and I'm 43 and, you know, I eat pretty well, but, you know, slap some cupcakes down in front of me, I'm going to eat them, you know, and I'm going to figure it out later. You know, what I need to do about that. 'Cause when I also got serious, that was the other side of it. Like I went to the other extreme of like trying to find balance was really important. Because I went to the other extreme. Like I worked out every day, you know, I did, like at one point, you know, I was taking selfies all the time and posting them. And like, you know, I had like a streak of like 36 days that I had either lifted weights, done cardio, or both, you know, sometimes doing cardio after weights and then going to Soul Cycle later. And that was all like, you know, so I had like 5 weeks where I didn't take a single rest day, and everything hurt. I was exhausted. You know, the food wasn't good to me anymore because I was just so hungry all the time. And, you know, like that was another thing, like my husband called out and he was like, we need to try to find the balance. Like, you know, I'm glad you're here, but now let's kind of scale it back and figure out what's appropriate.
You know, it's interesting. I spoke about this earlier today. It's this idea, people want to find balance, right? I think it's one of the things that all, it's almost human nature to want to find balance in life, like the right work-life balance, the family balance, relationship balance, like everyone wants balance. But right. One of the things that I very firmly believe is that I think in order to find balance, you have to go through periods in which you're very unbalanced. You have to sort of tip the scale in either direction before you can really find the edge and then, okay, well, cool. So this is the edge. Now I got to bring it back a little bit. You sort of have to go to the other side before you know where your limits are.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, they're so focused on the idea of finding balance before they've ever even really given it enough effort to even move the needle at all that they don't make any progress whatsoever.
Right.
Because they're so scared of being unbalanced. And I think the best way to become more balanced is to take action, try new things. You'll probably go to a point in which you're a little bit unbalanced. People around you might be like, hey, you're taking this too seriously. And then cool, then you can rein it back into the other side. But I think too many people are focused on the end destination of balance before they've ever really taken a step forward and experienced unbalance.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, well, when I was a teacher, you know, like that was the thing we would talk about is like, there's a educational theory of like disequilibrium. Like when you're learning something new, you're entering, you're leaving the zone of the stuff that you know, and you're now entering this other zone of disequilibrium where you're now being given all this new information and you're trying to process how it connects with what you already know, and you know you're trying to make sense of it, and so you're kind of off balance with everything, and to move forward again, and it's going to happen again. And so I do think you're right in that. It's that we're too afraid sometimes to go to the extreme because there are horrible things that could happen, but then at the same time we want to but you got to know what the edge is before you know what the middle is.
That's exactly right. That I love. You have to know what the edge is before you can find the middle. That's exactly right. And you know, one thing that you've brought up several times, that, and this is something that's really interested me, in terms of like on a larger scale is the idea of like a moment. And clearly you had a moment in which things changed for you, in which you decided, I really have to make this change. And it seemed like that conversation with Ray was that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, does it take having a moment like that for everybody? And this is, you don't have to answer as like a definitive yes or no, but I've always wondered, essentially, do people need that moment? And then if they do need that moment, is there a way to create that moment yourself?
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't think I could have created that moment. I mean, I did, obviously, but I don't think I could have consciously created what happened between us. It was sort of the perfect storm of like where I was in my life and where he was. And I mean, it was just, it just happened. And it, you know, again, I was scared. I was so scared. I was like, well, you know, we had a training session the next day and I was like, I'm not going to go because I got to face this thing again. And I got to suck it up and just, you know, swallow my pride and just kind of go in and face this. And so I don't know if I could have created that moment consciously, if I could have put the parts into place. And for other people, I think for people who've probably struggled with fitness and weight loss their whole lives, it might need to happen that way, you know, have a moment. For other people that it comes a little bit more naturally to, or they've never really had, a genuine struggle with maintaining weight or, losing weight or being overweight or anything like that. Maybe it doesn't need that moment for it to click with them. But for me, for the years of being, trying everything, you know, I've tried every diet, I've tried every eating fad, you know, my mom even took me when I was a kid. My mom took me with her to a Weight Watchers meeting, and that was going to help me. And, none of it ever clicked, you know.
So,
and
what was the, I know you said you were scared when like you had that conversation with Ray. Like, what were you scared of?
Well, I was scared of this person who was going to give up on me. And again, it was back to those relationships of like, here's this person who's invested not a small amount of his time in me, but he was ready to walk away, you know. And it was like, you know, my marriage, like Dave could walk away, and like, you know, my boss could fire me, you know. So I think it was just this idea of like a relationship that I thought I had cultivated that was about to end. And then the other part of it that scared me was like, I'm not going to change. I'm just going to go back to all my old ways, and I'm going to get back up to 350 pounds. I'm going to let my, you know, I'm going to let my diabetes get way out of control again. I'm going to be on insulin. And, you know, I was like, I started the cascade of like the shitstorm that was coming to me. And it wasn't until I kind of had that aha moment of like, well, I can control some of this. I can't control Ray. I can't control, but I can control what I put in my mouth. I can control to try to understand why I want to eat the food that I want to eat. I can understand these things. Again, it comes back to me. You know, this is all me, and what can I control? And until then, fear, in that case, is controlling me, and I don't want that.
That's really interesting. And that's, you know, that's something that as a coach, I'm sure you can relate to it from a coach's perspective and on an individual perspective, just with your own experience. I always try and figure out, because I consistently see this. People tend to have a moment, right?
Yeah.
There's a moment in people's life. And it's not only just with health and fitness or weight loss or anything. It's like with smoking cessation, with alcohol cessation, with there's with someone who's like wanting to start a business and they just keep putting it off, and all of a sudden, boom, they have a moment in which like, I'm all in. I see it over and over and over with people. They have a moment in which all of a sudden things change. And the crazy part is a lot of it is fear. And
yeah.
It's fear. And I think there's so much to be said for that. And I feel like a lot of people might hear that and be like, oh, you shouldn't change who you are because of fear. You shouldn't change what you're doing because of fear. It's like, but what if changing your habits because of a fear changes your life for the better in a way that you could never imagine? What if changing your life out of a fear of going back on insulin and letting your diabetes get out of control, what if that lets you live another 10, 15, 20 years? You know, like what if doing that allows you to achieve goals that you wouldn't have before? And so it would have been a struggle, but it allows you to achieve a higher level of performance that also improves your happiness and your health. It's like, it's something that I just think about a lot. And I think there's a lot to be said for using fear to your advantage.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, one of the things a lot of people have asked me about, you know, from a business perspective, like how do you motivate yourself from a business perspective, and especially earlier on? And I would always say I didn't have a choice. Like, I'm supporting my mom, I'm supporting myself, I'm paying my own bills. If I don't make money, I'm literally on the street, and like that's scary. And yeah. You know, it's like, that fear is one of the things that drove me to really, really work. And I think in the same thing with fitness, it's like recently I'm going through a new fitness transformation of myself. And I think I'm very much past the point of struggling with motivation. I'm on a good habits again, and I'm really enjoying it again. But one of the things that I was really scared of is when I stopped with Gary, or even a little bit before that, when I really started to get my fitness back in order, my whole family is obese, like morbidly obese. And I was like,
yeah.
I could very easily see myself falling down that path simply based on, like, even though I'd never struggled with that, like, fortunately my whole life I liked athletics and I was very fit. I could see myself going down that path just based on where my family was. And I think there's so much value in being able to see and recognize and maybe even cultivate fear on your own in order to use that fear as motivation, as long as it doesn't mm-hmm. inhibit you from taking action.
Yeah. I fully agree with that. I mean, like, because the question I say to people then is, like, why do we change it all? You know, right. If we don't do it out of, like, we maybe the motivations aren't different, but there's always fear. There's always going into this unknown adventure and figuring it out, you know. You know, like I reference it, like I perform improv every week here in San Francisco. I, you know, I have many, many friends, and like one of the central tenets of like when you're sort of going through classes and stuff is like, follow the fear. The thing that scares you most about doing on stage, like, you should do that because of the nature of the art form. You know, you're going to be supported by everybody around you. And so if there's something that scares us, you know, or if there's a topic that we want to shy away from, it's like more a matter of like, don't, like, go at it, you know, and then run, you know, follow that fear and then run through it. And it becomes something completely different anyway. And it's like that idea. I apply that a lot to my life, is like, if this scares me, I should probably do it, because it's probably not going to kill me if it's just, you know, trying to count calories. You know, counting calories was this scary, like, I don't want to do all that, you know. And then I started doing it and I'm like, well, this wasn't so fucking bad.
I love that.
You know, it's like, because I don't want to be tied down to a food scale. And it's like, but man, has it made my life a whole lot easier, you know? Like,
dude, I love that. Cause so many people say, oh, well, I don't want to be obsessive about it. Like, I don't want to be obsessed with my nutrition. I don't want to be tied down to a food scale. But just like you said, I bet in the short term, it took more time, it was more difficult, but long term, it's completely changed your life.
Exactly. And so it's like these things that we're afraid of, but we're afraid of them because we don't know how they're going to turn out. And the only way we know how they're going to turn out is if we go do it. And, you know, and that's the thing, like people walking into the club looking for a trainer, it's like, it's scary, you know, and I've sat down with people and I tell them, I said, you're about to invest in one of the most selfish acts that you will ever do. You're about to give me like $1,500. I'm going to create workouts for you. I'm going to have you come in and I'm going to plan it out and I'm going to check in with you. I'm going to stretch with you. I'm going to do all these things. It's strictly just for you. Nobody else for the hour that you have me. I'm like, this is fucking selfish, but everybody reaps the rewards of this singular selfish act. So let it go.
You know? Yeah. And if being selfish to a point is incredibly important. I was actually just talking with Rico about this recently in terms of a lot of times people will try so hard to do things for other people that they end up doing so little for themselves that they end up resenting the people they're doing things for.
Right.
And it's by no fault of the people they're trying to help. It's your own fault that you, and any like of the bad relationship that stems from it because of your own resentment, it's your fault because you didn't either set boundaries or you didn't do what you needed to do for yourself on your own. So for right. people to feel comfortable, hey, this is very selfish of me, but I think selfish has a lot of people have that bad connotation with the word.
Right.
When it's not a bad word, it's not a bad thing. Being selfish, there again, balance, selfish right. and selfless. Being too selfless is bad. Being too selfish is bad. You have to have a balance of the two.
Exactly. And that one actually came to me because there was a period of time where I was unemployed and my husband's a doctor and he has a side gig where he takes service for one of the county hospitals. And so he does pretty well financially. And so we were able to kind of make it work in the Bay Area on a single income. And for those of people that listen to this, like the joke is, yes, I'm married to a doctor, but I live in the Bay Area. So we can be working poor yep. on a 6-figure salary. So
yeah, I get that living in New York, man. I understand that for sure.
You know, so, but one of the things was, is, you know, every once in a while, money would be a little tight, you know, but he would not let me take a break from training with Ray, even when I knew it would save us, you know, the monthly fee, you know, like I'd be like, well, I know how we can save a good chunk of cash this month. And he'd always say, nope, we'll figure it out. I told him, you know, and I told him one day, I said, I feel very selfish. I feel like I'm taking your money to pay for this extravagant thing, you know, and then, you know, because, you know, we've been together for 17 years. And so, you know, we have good conversations. And he just said, you know, he's like, it's our money. Yes, I earned it. It's our money. You're unemployed right now. You're going to figure it out and find a job. And, you know, but this makes you well, this makes you happy. Why am I going to take that away from you when we can make it work? You know, and there was just, yeah, you know, and it's true.
That's amazing. I love that. That's incredible. That's really incredible. And I think, I really want to say thank you for this call, because I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I learned a lot on this call. I one of the best things that I like about this type of stuff is I learn every time. And I think one of the best things I've taken from speaking with you just now is not just the importance of doing it for yourself, but learning how to phrase it and really how to make it more practical. I'm actually going to listen to this call over several times, because the way that you phrase things and the way how it all kept coming back to your own personal responsibility, it's very powerful. And it's very powerful. And it's almost like I'm getting emotional just thinking and talking about it, just because so much of what we hear nowadays is blaming other things, like blaming things going on all around us, either blaming either people or blaming society or blaming culture. And it's a lot of negativity. And there's, of course, all these things that can be difficult and make up more obstacles because of that. But what you outlined so well and so articulately is that no matter what's going on around you, it doesn't change the fact that if you want to make a change, it has to come from you. That no matter what's going on in society, no matter what's going on with your friends, no matter what's going on with your job, that it doesn't matter from the perspective of if you really want to make a change, it has to start with you. And that's it, period, end of story. And I think that the more people can really internalize that, the more likely they are to have that own their moment in which they can make that change.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Man, I love you. Seriously, thank you so much for this.
Yeah, no problem, Jordan.
And I don't know if you'd like to. If you don't want to, that's fine. Is there, if you're posting fitness stuff, is there anywhere where people could find you or follow you?
Yeah, so I have my personal Instagram, which is HobbsND97. So Hobbs the Calvin and Hobbs. And then ND, this is a very old name because I graduated from Notre Dame in 1997. So that's the explanation to HobbsND97. That's my personal Instagram. You know, and then I'm on, you know, I am on Facebook. I'm friends with a bunch of people now through the Inner Circle, which has been a great, valuable resource. I'm really glad I found you and that whole community. So people, you know, from the Inner Circle can feel free to friend request me there. You know, and be ready for the heart reacts, because that's all I do. I heart react. That's all I do.
I love it, man. Hey, dude, thank you so much. I love you and I appreciate you, and have a good time at improv tonight. All right.
I will. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that wraps it up for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you're enjoying the podcast and if you like it, please do me a huge favor and leave a review, both the stars as well as a written review. They help a tremendous amount, much more than I realized. So if you could do that, it would mean the world to me. Have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you soon.